back to who knew? A normal, regular episode.
It's not just a normal, regular episode, though. It's a milestone.
Oh, it is our 100th, isn't it?
It is our 100th episode.
It wasn't supposed to be, and then we had to put out a bonus episode.
Yeah.
So now it is.
Our work lives are conflicting again, so we couldn't find a time to record last week.
That's fine, though.
Yeah. Everything worked out.
100, it's almost our 2-year anniversary. Let's do something special for that.
For the 2-year?
How about, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That'd be, what, episode 104?
Sure.
Because there's 52 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Well, do you have anything? How was your week?
My week was fine. How was yours?
It was good.
Good.
Yeah.
Boring.
It was not boring.
No?
It's actually a pretty shitty week at work, but I'm trying to move past it.
Okay. Good for you for moving on past that.
Thank you.
Well, I guess we should just get right into it then.
Let's do it.
I'm talking about a haunted hotel.
Yes.
The Adolphus Hotel in Texas. I have, like, 2 or 3 bullet points of history and then, like, 6 million bullet points of deaths.
Outstanding.
So, it gets crazy and then haunted, obviously. So, the Adolphus Hotel is made by a man named Adolphus Busch. He, in the late 1800s, is a German man who made his fortune in America in St. Louis as a craftsman. Eventually, he moved his business to Dallas, Texas, which he was like, there's a huge boom in the real estate market, and I really think we can make some profit here in the early 1900s. So his main goal was to basically build a luxury hotel with, like, architecture that was based on, like, German castles, but, like, taller. He wanted it to be, like, iconic.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, to be noted, there is a 22, yes, you heard that right, 22-story tower that was the state's tallest building for over a decade. And that was in the early 1900s. And I can't even imagine being in a building that's, like, over 10, no, not even 10 floors, like, 5 floors.
No.
Like, it stresses me out when I'm, like, right, in major cities that have just skyscrapers everywhere. Anyways, so the building of the Adolphus Hotel cost $1.87 million, which is roughly $50 million in today's money. And it, I know, it officially opened on October 5th, 1912. So
what is, like, a standard, like, luxury hotel cost to build today, I wonder?
Probably more than $50
million. Right?
I guarantee it.
Like, what about, like, a Quality Inn?
Quality Inn, $1,000. Sure. Those things
they
are cheap.
They owe us money.
Yes. Those things suck. So I have no idea. I did not look into that. Maybe next time.
Okay.
Maybe not. But for over 100 years after it was created and opened, the Adolphus Hotel has been a Dallas icon. It played an incontrovertible role in the city's history and culture. Basically, it was like the place for shows, for any type of play, for any type of band, for any type of performance that was going on. That was the place that you wanted to perform at the time, and probably still. And there's been several renovations that have happened during its lifetime, but nothing that has, like, changed its like character, basically. Okay. Like,
they didn't, like, modernize it.
No, or it is, like, stayed in its original. Like, they've basically just kept it up versus, like, we hear all the time of hotels just, like, being run down.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, obviously this is a luxury hotel and they can afford to the upkeep, right, of, like, keeping it to its original, like, splendor. So not only were there, like, was this a hot spot of, like, performances, but also, like, basically name a famous person and they've been there. Like, it's insane. Like, presidents, celebrities, even Queen Elizabeth stayed in the hotel in 1991 while they were visiting Dallas. Or her and her husband. And it was put on the National Register of Historic Places in 1983. So, 2019, it underwent a 2-year renovation, as, again, just to keep up with its
codes.
Like normal wear and tear and stuff like that. Like Jack said, codes. But that was a multi-million dollar project. Whoa. Yeah.
How fucked up were the...
I don't know. I think maybe they were also just like...
Updating.
Yeah, just updating probably like curtains and carpet and stuff like that. Probably right. like things that like are really small, but cost a lot when it's on the large scale.
Trying to get it vintage too.
Yeah.
And keep that... Skyrocket.
Like that integrity. Sure. Yeah. So 5 years, I skipped like six bullets. So now that's basically where all the cool history ends. We're going to talk about all of the bad shit that has happened there. Sick. So 2 weeks after the hotel opened on October 20th, a waiter died on the property. He had apparently just arrived from Chicago and was talking to a coworker when he turned to enter the elevator, but the elevator had already left. He fell 3 floors down the elevator shaft and crushed his skull. He died 2 hours later at the Baptist Sanitarium.
Well, shit.
5 years later in 1917, a newly minted elevator boy attempted to jump inside of the elevator car as it made its ascent, because obviously he's like, I can do this. Unfortunately, he did not make the jump, and he plummeted 100 feet to the basement.
Oh, no.
Yeah, obviously did not survive that. The papers at the time reported that his skull had been shattered and both of his legs had been broken. So he didn't really stand a chance. Big bummer. So then in 1924, a couple days before Halloween, a young cook stuck his head into... Do you want to guess what he stuck his head into?
The elevator.
Yep. He stuck his head into the elevator shaft to see why it was taking so long. And seconds later, the car came down and... killed him, yeah. As I'm sure how you can imagine that would happen.
I say we just trust the elevator to do
what
I just
think
does.
It's interesting. I'm like, did they not have doors on the elevator? Or, like, could people just, like, rip those doors open whenever they wanted to?
It's like the ones on the Titanic.
Yeah, where, like, you just pull the...
Their manual or whatever.
Yeah, which that's... I wouldn't do that even if we had the automatic doors that we have now. Like, fuck right. that. No way. I don't trust myself. So then March 15th, 1971, a hotel employee asked his coworker to make sure that the elevator car arrived to the second floor so they could load, like band equipment and stuff to it for like a performance that was going on. And his coworker shouted, "Yes, it's here," to the first employee. And then the coworker stepped into the elevator. It wasn't there. I don't know what he thinks he saw. But there was no elevator car, so that coworker fell to his death in the basement. Enough with the elevator. We're finally done with Good the elevator. Lord. That's like five deaths.
Yeah.
So May 13th, 1913, a 45-year-old insurance man from New Hampshire apparently, quote, sank into the sidewalk, end quote, that was nearby the hotel. And I don't know if, like, they didn't wait for the cement to dry and that's how they sank into the sidewalk, or if, like, it, like, literally, like, the ground gave in under him. I don't know what they meant that he sank into the sidewalk. Regardless, his friends got him out of the hole and brought him to the hotel, because that's obviously what you do, and 30 minutes later, he died in the hotel. His death was ruled, quote, an acute attack of indigestion and apoplexy, end quote, which apparently back in the day meant maybe a stroke, but also... Back in the day, it was difficult to tell the difference between strokes and heart attacks. Mm. So they just kind of gave it this broad, like, it could be an apoplexy. That doesn't even sound like a word. I'm probably saying that wrong. But it was just like a general term for, like, we don't know, but it was kind of bad then.
Bad enough he died.
Yeah, bad enough that he's dead. So then February 7th, 1915, during a business meeting with a Dallas man, a 26-year-old traveling collector for an Iowa cement company, fucking cement again, pardoned himself from his hotel, like, to go to his both hotel bathroom, and apparently, quote, threw himself across the bed and was soon in convulsions, end quote. Basically, they go there and they find him dead. And then they find in the room with him a bottle that is a third empty of a bottle. It is labeled, said poison.
Oh.
Like, tell me, like, how fucking cliche that is to have a bottle that's, like, labeled poison and the man drinks from the bottle.
Crossbow. Yeah. And
like some fucking Emperor's New Groove shit. So, and there was also a did you just get my joke? There's also in the room a note that it was believed to have been addressed to the decedent's stepfather, and it read, quote, "I got the wrong bottle. Love to all," end quote. So did he get the wrong bottle if he knew that it was wrong? Maybe it was right. Maybe
did he drink it and then he's like, oh shit.
Maybe.
Or did he?
I have no idea.
Some shit up.
This was back in like 1915, so
right.
Not sure how well they kept the records or cared enough to keep records. Yeah. So then 5 years later, on January 15th, just after 11 p.m., the Commerce Street entrance to the Adolphus, there was a chauffeur for the Boer Auto Rental Company. He was shot 3 times by another chauffeur for the Adolphus Auto Rent Company. About 20 witnesses were on scene, and one of the victim's co-workers explained that there had been bad blood between the two chauffeurs, and they had an argument several days before that, and then the suspect, the gunman, had a bruise and cut on his face to prove that there was a fight and that he had to seek revenge or something dumb like that, some boy stuff, you know. So there was that death between two chauffeurs.
Some boy stuff.
So fucking dumb, dude. So then February 21st, 1930, a model was going into a hotel room to assist a 60-year-old salesman with his spring display. So I'm sure that's exactly what she was doing with him. But when she went into the room, she found nothing but torn window screen. So then she notified staff and she was like, hey, I was supposed to help this dude, but he's not there. And then his window's open. So then they go to try to look for him. And he was found in an air shaft. The young woman, the model, told authorities that the man had been recently despondent and had told her he wouldn't see his family again. And so investigators ruled the case as a suicidal jump that just ended up with him going into the air shafts. Right. According to the news back then, this is kind of a long quote, so bear with me. The force gained in the fall from the 8th floor caused his body to tear through galvanized iron roof of an air shaft in one of the inside courts. He had plunged on through to the bottom of the shaft, and his head and body were badly torn and cut by the blades of a powerful fan, end quote.
Ooh.
Yeah, super eek. Which explains a loud crash and puff of dust that nearby kitchen employees had heard the night before.
Hmm.
They're like, there's this weird poof of dust that came from the ventilation system.
It was the craziest thing.
It was so weird. So then October 8th, 1933, a 2-year-old son of a magician that was touring and performing there from the Henry Busse? Henry Busse Orchestra the two-year-old climbed on top of the windowsill to look out at the band playing on the street. When the screen gave out, he fell 12 stories. The hotel's assistant manager apparently ran to the body, grabbed him, and ran to the house physician, but they were unable to do anything, and they pronounced him dead. In the court case to follow, a judge ruled that the Adolphus had no liable reason for the child's death, and there was the parents who were suing the hotel for $1,156.15, which I'm sure is a lot more today. The judge basically said that the purpose of the screen was not to prevent people from falling, but to keep insects out. So therefore, the screen giving way with a child leaning on it was no fault but the boy's.
Yikes.
Yeah. So then in 1935, the hotel was hosting a wedding in their ballroom on the 19th floor. All the wedding guests were ready and seated and eagerly waiting for the ceremony to start, but they waited and they waited. And this is the age old urban legend of basically what happens to cold feet. Mm-hmm. So the groom didn't show up. So the bride was obviously very upset. Mm-hmm. Hours after they called off the wedding, her body was found hanging a few feet above the altar for where she was supposed to get married. Super fucking sad.
Bummer.
So we still have a lot of deaths going on. God, this is a lot more than I remember writing. On June 24th, 1940, a crowd watched from the street as a 50-year-old man leaned out of the 11th floor window. He was surrounded by smoke and pleading, "Please, somebody, save me." His clothes were reportedly on fire, and some witnesses believed that the man was overcome by smoke and fell, while officials believed that he jumped to escape the flames. I mean, either way is probably
right.
Both. As he fell, he died on impact when his head struck the hotel's marquee. More controversy ensued over reports that firemen were held up by the hotel's night clerk and delayed when they were given the wrong floor. 4 days after an extensive investigation, jurors decided that no state laws were violated during the incident. So, holding up first responders apparently wasn't that big of a deal back then.
Right.
August 3rd, 1946, according to the fire marshal, a 51-year-old Dallas man woke up and he had burned his pillow and his sheets because he fell asleep while smoking. So he burned his bedding, and so he went to the bathroom to like clean it up, and he just basically was like, fuck it, I'm tired, I'm gonna go back to bed. And he apparently succumbed to, quote, smoking gas when the fire flared up again, end quote. So don't smoke and sleep, folks. On May 27th, 1955, a maid discovered a 36-year-old, fashion, what is that, what are they called? Like, influencer buyers back in the day. They were visiting from Houston for a fashion show. They found her dead in her room. It was determined to have been a natural death due to, are you ready for her cause of death?
I guess.
Acute alcoholism. Isn't that how it is for all women? Alcoholism? Acute alcoholism.
So she drank herself to death?
Basically.
Like very fast?
Apparently.
Okay.
But it was acute. So.
That means fast.
Oh, is it? I'm thinking of like an angle. Oh.
Short, yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I was like, how can you have like a little bit of alcohol, but it kills you? That makes way more sense.
A lot of alcohol. A little bit of time.
Okay. Wow. Guys, I swear I'm not that stupid all the time. So then July 14th, 1959, there's a huge controversy, which is kind of true crime. And it's very, very controversial. And I apologize to our listeners because it's disturbing when it comes to racism. So, great. Yes. So July 14th, there was a smashed body of a 25-year-old prostitute who was found in a small courtyard 14 floors below her room. The news at the time described the woman's body plunging down the 4x8 inset in the building to the courtyard, and they said that she ricocheted from wall to wall, like bouncing back and forth, basically. And also included that a book called A Fool There Was had been found in her bedroom, which seemed important because all of my sources were like, there was this book in her room. Like, I don't understand why that matters. But there also in her room was a sign of a struggle, and the case remained a mystery for months. Then a 31-year-old man who had a, quote, record for procuring, end quote, which apparently if you use your mind for 2 seconds and procuring and prostitute together, he was a pimp. He was questioned, and so were two other men for the death of her. But it wasn't until months later in January of 1959, when an 18-year-old woman was beaten and left to death in the Mercantile Centennial Building closet, and authorities, when investigating that, encountered a Willie Philpott, who the news noted as a N-word two-time loser.
What does that mean?
I don't know. He was an N-word two-time loser.
Okay.
So that is the part that I hated the most. So in the weeks to follow, authorities said that Philpott confessed to the series of crimes, each including the Mercantile Building and then the one that we talked about at the hotel, and then also included the rape and slaying of a 10-year-old girl in Longview, Texas. She was beaten by several men in Alabama first. Yeah. So, super fucked up. According to authorities, Philpott said that he was employed at the Adolphus, and after delivering food and setups to a woman's room throughout the day, she gave him whiskey. So, then, obviously, you can assume what happened. Yeah. He got friendly with her and then killed her.
That's not very friendly.
Yeah, I mean, as friendly as, like, he's a trickster. He tricked her. In a February 1959 news article, it says, quote, As they talked, his hand began to twitch, and he flipped a towel around her neck. When she became still, he tossed her out the window and went back to work, end quote. Philpott was eventually executed in Huntsville for the rape and murder of the 10-year-old black girl, but not for the other crimes. But still, I'm fine with him being executed. So let's talk about haunts. What do you think is haunted in this hotel?
The elevator.
Yes, it's very haunted. Guests see people come into the elevator but don't come out, or vice versa. They hear moaning from the walls of the elevator. They even hear that employee's final words of "yes, it's here" as they step inside of the elevator, which is fucking creepy. Guests also see mangled forms of hotel employees riding beside them, dressed in old-fashioned uniforms. They also see those same similar disgusting-looking employees that warn guests to watch their step before entering the elevator. And there's apparently a YouTube video from 2009 where a creator watches elevator doors open and close while a phone rings in front of multiple guests. The YouTube video is called "Haunted Elevators at Adolphus Hotel Dallas." So you can Google that and find it if you are that interested. Then there is the 19th floor ballroom where the bride killed herself. Guests hear a woman crying and footsteps running up and down the hall. And what I think most disturbingly is that they hear the sound of a rope creaking as if under the strain of a body. And a bride figure can be seen still wearing her white dress and veil and wandering through the halls after like big events and parties have happened. So throughout the hotel, the staff feel like they are being watched and or followed, but there's never anyone there. Guests often complain to the front desk of heavy footsteps outside their rooms, but when security goes to investigate, there's, again, never anyone there. Guests also report the sounds of a piano or a big band playing music, like from back in the day, but there's nothing like that happening. And housekeepers feel tapping on their shoulders while they're working in the bathrooms. And they also see windows opening without anyone there to open them. Hmm. The one that I think is super fun is that there's a woman who used to be a regular in the bistro of the hotel. She would come in all the time. And she always had a specific table that she would sit at. And she passed away. I don't think she passed away in the hotel. I couldn't find that anywhere. But she can, like, her figure can be seen walking over and sitting at her favorite table. Yikes. But, like, hotel guests are like, that's not a person.
Right.
That's all I have. My sources are DMMagazine.com. I got a couple of articles from them, and then hauntedrooms.com, the Adolphus website itself, and then DallasTerrors.com.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's worth a, well, if we didn't hate Texas.
If Texas didn't want to take away women's rights.
Right. We would probably go there.
Maybe.
And stay there, but.
But again.
Plenty of other haunted hotels. It just blows my mind how many people, like, fell in the elevator.
Isn't that so fucking weird?
Like, it's not that hard to not do that.
It also seems like it's not that hard to do that because, like, other places have had, elevators that we've talked about from back then and never had, like, seven deaths because of it.
Right. That's absurd.
Yeah. I don't know.
It almost leads you to believe, like, maybe something about the elevator land made them believe it was fine when it really wasn't.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Good idea.
Are you ready for another Texas hotel we'll never go to?
Yes.
I'm going to tell you about the Manger Hotel, which is in San Antonio.
Oh, yeah. I have pictures of it, like, real actual pictures that I have.
Yep. So let's just get right into it. Before I forget, I got all of my info from ghostcitytours.com.
That's the tour that I went on.
Yep.
How fun.
So you've probably heard all of it.
Probably.
So you went in the Manger.
No, they wouldn't let us go in.
Why?
All of the hotels that we walked by, like, he basically just said that, like, there's so many ghost tours. Like, when we were going around, there was, like, four other tours that were also going around. It was insane, and it was kind of complicated because they all had, like, microphones so, like, people could hear them. Mm-hmm. And he's like, we can try to go in, but most of the time they kick us out. Like, they always have security at the front to make sure that, like, large groups like us don't come in and bother the guests.
Seems a little silly, but whatever.
Yeah.
So before the land where the Menger Hotel sits became a hotel, it was the scene of what was, you know, one of the most remembered fights for Texas independence ever, and that is the Alamo.
Yeah.
So Texas was trying to become free from Mexico, and there were, like, before that actually happened, there were a bunch of little fights that ultimately resulted in the actual Alamo fight. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go on into that too much because that's a pretty well-known.
I'm so glad that you're talking about this because I would have gone balls deep into that. Into the Alamo? I love the history of shit. We learned so much about the Alamo while we were there, the ghost tour.
Yeah.
Which makes sense because it was part of the tour. But
well, so basically, the Texans and the Tejanos got together. They're going to fight. It lasted for... Sounds like a gang fight on, like, a musical.
Yeah, it's like Hamilton.
Yeah, it lasted for 13 days. And so the commanding officer, William Travis, sent a bunch of people to other Texas communities to get help and was rewarded when 32 volunteers arrived at the Alamo, which who cares? Because honestly, the Mexican forces had 4,000, but 32 is fine. Again, days and days, the battle was going on and on and on. But then on March 6th of 1836, the Mexican soldiers rushed the whole compound. General Santa Anna's troops took the whole church, busted the doors open with a cannon. And one by one, the Texans fell, including the infamous James Bowie and Davy Crockett. And then on the land where the Menger Hotel was built on 23 years later, which is not that much longer after... the Alamo fell to General Santa Anna, and it was reported that all of the men fighting for Texas died. So then, the Menger gets built by the 1840s. We've talked about it before, like, Manifest Destiny was a whole thing. Everybody was trying to move west to, like, gain their own land and, like, farm and create their home, their own, like, perfect little America, right? The 20-year-old German immigrant William A. Menger must have felt... like he had to be a part of that. So he moved out to San Antonio in the early 1840s when it was still like very much like not a big city. It was like a cattle town. Menger wasted no time, settled down in San Antonio, and within a few years he started the Western Brewery with his partner Charles Philip Degen, who was another German brewmaster. And the Western Brewery was not only the first brewery in Texas, but by 1878, it had grown to become the largest operating brewery in the whole state.
How interesting.
So it was like the first one, and then it was the biggest one. Mm-hmm. Menger ended up buying out his competitor Naylor's Brewery in 1868 and earned the nickname the Beer King. Fun fact. Western Brewery had been built on part of the site in which the Battle of the Alamo happened. Just on the other side was a boarding house that was owned by a widow named Mary Gunther. And as it turned out, Mary was one of the first people that Menger met when he moved to San Antonio. He had been looking for a job and made her boarding house his, like, temporary, ends up being kind of permanent house for 3 years while he's thinking up this, like, hotel and brewery, everything. Finally, he convinces her to marry him.
Oh.
They get married. Both businesses did great in the San Antonio market, but soon enough they realized that they were going to have to expand the boarding house portion of it, and that is where they turned it into a hotel. Named it the Menger Hotel after themselves, and to design their dream hotel, they hired a local architect by the name of John M. Fries, and on February 1st of 1859, hotel was finished. It was at the time a two-story stone-cut structure with a bunch of like classical details that were very fancy at the time. Probably still pretty fancy now. The interior was even more fancy. William Menger continued to operate the brewery and actually had like a big cellar constructed under the hotel. 3-foot-thick stone walls formed an underground space that was used to chill all the beer that he was producing at the brewery, and a tunnel ran between the two so that he could bring guests of the hotel next door to try some of his beer. The Menger received so much attention that within 3 months of its grand opening, the two of them began to sketch out a plan to expand it, which is fucking fast.
Seriously.
Yeah. What started out as a 50-room hotel then became a hotel of 90 rooms, making it the largest one in the area. However, the war happens, which placed a huge weight on all kinds of businesses in the area, and that was not an exception for the Mengers. The number of people that were coming to stay at the hotel slowed down dramatically, and William was forced to shut it down altogether for a little bit. In an attempt to show their support for the war efforts, they instead chose to open the hotel's doors for the sick and wounded, as many hotels in the South and North at the time did. For the length of the whole war, Menger was converted into a makeshift hospital for those who were sick or incredibly wounded from the war. And many passed away during this period, unable to get better, or, I mean, doctors weren't great back then.
Yeah, they were probably still bloodletting.
Yep. Not so many years later, William Menger actually passed away at the hotel in March of 1871. The whole city, he was such a big, like, figure in the city that the whole city was extremely saddened by his death. But the cause of his death actually remains a mystery even to this day.
Huh.
Prior to his death, a local newspaper wrote, "Our community can ill spare a gentleman of such public spirit, such enterprise, such generosity, and such wonderful energy."
Hmm.
He, I guess, got, like, really sick and just kind of wasted away there. There was no autopsy ever done, so nobody really knows.
COVID.
Yeah, probably. So his wife didn't give up at all, like... Some widows would kind of just be like, I'm done with the business, I'm done with this brewery. She didn't do that. Right after he passed, she was quick to put an ad in the local paper. And in that ad, she assured locals that his death would, quote, cause no change in affairs at the brewery or the hotel.
Hmm.
Which was actually true. She didn't let his death do anything at all to the business, which is pretty nice. Impressive. In 1 year alone, she welcomed 2,000 guests to the hotel. With the expansion of trains and a brand new depot station being laid out in San Antonio, the Menger Hotel went on to even bigger heights. And by the 1870s, she decided to add a bunch of, like, at the time, modern technology and outfitted the whole hotel with a gas source so that they could have, like, better heating, things like that. Age was probably the only thing that kind of slowed Mary down. Her son didn't like the idea of inheriting the hotel and the property was sold instead to the original contractor. The Menger sold in 1881 for $118,000, which is roughly $2.8 million today.
Damn.
And the buyer also purchased all the interior furnishings for another $8,500. Which is $203,000 today, roughly. Under his management, a new bar was installed, and it became one of the most elegant of the day. It is almost an identical image to the bar at the House of Lords Club in London, which is, like, super fancy.
Interesting.
It was equipped with a cherry wood bar, matching cherry wood ceiling, and French mirrors.
Hmm.
And the Menger just flourished. Unfortunately, reports surfaced in the newspaper on October 15th of 1924, and the headlines read, "Flames rout Menger guests, $15 million of oil exploding."
Oh.
So there was a huge fire. There's a ton of, like, oil refineries, and that's still the case today. But, yeah, a bunch of oil exploded. And that ended up not being entirely responsible for the major fire, which did occur at the hotel. It ended up starting in the kitchen, which was in the hotel's new addition, and the flames got all the walls, the ceiling. The wood would ultimately be the Menger's downfall because it was full of all this, like, ornate wood.
Mm-hmm.
The fire went quickly along all the woodwork, heating the expanse of the chimney and completely swallowing the entirety of the third and fourth floors.
Damn.
And all the guests were urged to evacuate, thanks to a night clerk who realized what was happening. So it's the middle of the night. He went to every single room on his own, rapped on all the doors, woke everybody up, kicked him out. Apparently one guest reacted with such, she was so freaked out that he pushed, or she pushed the poor night clerk all the way down the stairs.
What the fuck?
Like, trying to get out. She's, like, pushing him so she can get out quicker.
That's like some Titanic shit.
Yeah. It was not the 101 guests staying at the Manger who were actually hurt. Instead, injuries came when the fire steam engine came rumbling down the road. So, the fire engine, which apparently they were steam engines back then, was heading to the fire and rammed into an oncoming streetcar, which injured the two firemen who were on it.
Oh, my gosh.
And three people who were on the streetcar.
What a joke.
One of the firemen was actually unconscious under all of it, but there's no mention that anybody died during this. So it was just good. A fucking
Jesus.
Nightmare. The Express recorded, and that's a newspaper, recorded, quote, "Rarely have the firemen had to do battle with a more stubborn or spectacular fire." Also, there was only two of them, so.
Yeah.
It was only after the fire raged for 45 minutes, the Houston Post wrote that, quote, "The flames, which at first threatened the entire building, were brought under control. The lighting plant was put out of commission, and the guests were forced to grope their way to the exits in the darkness." That'd be terrifying.
Yeah, that would be the worst.
Like, you know this hotel is on fire somewhere.
Well, as long as you're not going towards the light, I think you're fine.
Yeah, yeah. Over the last century and a half, the Manger has continued to be one of San Antonio's highlights for visitors and locals alike. The Great Depression era slowed business for the hotel, as it did for every business everywhere. But then the 1940s saw a reemergence of the hotel's popularity, and new renovations were added to the hotel by the then owners, which was a family, the Moody family, which is a great name. And the famous once again returned to their favorite spot. This included Mae West, Babe Ruth, Roy Rogers, among all kinds of others, just like your hotel. The Manger's restaurant, the Colonial Room Restaurant, received very high praise for its menu and still does. Apparently, they have a really good homemade mango ice cream.
Oh, that sounds so good right now.
In 1980, the Manger was awarded a state historic marker. And in 1989, it received one of the highest praises for being a historical hotel by being listed on the National Trust for Historic Preservation. Dang. Manger, with its annual Halloween party for kids and its annual Christmas party for underprivileged children, certainly deserves a lot of other awards that it has received.
Dang.
However, it's such a nice hotel that even when people die, they don't want to leave. It is constantly considered one of the, like, top 10 most haunted hotels in Texas. Now, every haunted hotel probably says that, but I don't know. So, there's some dispute on how many ghosts are actually haunting the halls of the Manger. Some put the number at around 32, 33. Others say that the number might be closer to, like, 45, 50.
What the fuck? How do you keep track of all those ghosts?
I have no idea. How do you, like, differentiate? I don't know, dude. That was nice.
That was very nice. Good.
Guests have reported countless paranormal phenomena, including everything from witnessing beds, like, levitate off the floor to hearing strange, like, knocking noises and seeing almost translucent faces. Almost translucent faces appear beside their own while they're looking in the mirror in their room.
I hate the bed floating thing. That is spooky. So gross.
That's a lot.
Like while people are in it?
It takes like three or four people to lift a bed. I don't know.
Yeah. Like I'm lucky if I can lift the mattress.
The scent of cigar smoke is smelled frequently nowadays most rooms are non-smoking rooms, but still you'll smell fresh cigar smoke, and very heavy ornate doors are known to open with no source. Ooh. Or like a breeze couldn't do it. They're like thick solid wood.
Yeah, that's a pass.
Unlike a lot of other haunted locations, the Manger's ghosts aren't shy at all. If you choose to stay the night at the Manger, a lot of people say to just be ready for some pretty, like, out there insane activity.
Oh my gosh.
Teddy Roosevelt was a huge fan of the Menger, and mm-hmm. it's said that he might be haunting it.
Yeah.
People will see his ghost in the Menger Bar from time to time. And just before he and the Rough Riders rolled out to the Spanish-American War, they arrived in, like, 1898, and the leading colonel set up recruitment headquarters in the patio area of the Menger, and Teddy joined not 11 days later, and there was not a single doubt that, like, the group that they had there to fight was, like, when they call them the Rough Riders, there's, like, a reason for that, right?
Yeah.
Some were Teddy's classmates from Harvard. I didn't know that Teddy Roosevelt went to Harvard before I did this research.
I feel like every president went to Harvard.
Yeah, right. Harvard, Yale. I don't know. Others were Native Americans. There were some Texas cowboys, rangers. Just, it was, everybody was coming to fight. They'd appropriately earned their nickname for after a Washington, D.C. correspondent called them a rough riding outfit. They only stayed in San Antonio for about a month, and the locals preferred to call the men Teddy's Terrors.
What?
That
sounds, like, not intimidating, because all I can think about is a teddy bear. So then I'm just thinking of, like, Five Nights at Freddy's.
So, basically, they took over the town the whole time that they were there. Like,
okay.
Like, you know how you hear stories of, like, biker groups going to small towns and just take, like, paying to take over for
yeah.
a while. It was kind of like that, I think. Even though 100 years have passed since many of the Rough Riders were there, they still like to camp out at the Menger. Even more, the ghost of Teddy Roosevelt is one of the most frequently seen ghosts at the Menger. Almost always he is seen or heard, again, at the bar. Staff will see him while they're closing up at night. And he appears as a full-ass apparition. Never moves, never shifts. He just sits there at the bar, and then everybody who's in there feels like they're being watched all the time.
No shit.
Yeah.
How creepy.
He's also, like, very vocal. Even though he's, like, not moving or anything like that, he'll, like, yell at the workers.
That's not nice.
And then people will say that he'll, like, coerce them into, like, conversation, which I think that is very rare.
To coerce.
To actually have a conversation with an apparition. Dead person. That's, like, a famous president that's, like, very easily recognized.
Mm-hmm. People are like, what are you talking about? I'm talking to Robin Williams.
He's dead too, babe.
Yeah, no, I know. That's what makes it even funnier.
Damn. For the most part, the Menger staff don't, they're, like, not afraid of him. Sometimes they'll talk to him. It's a little bit rare. But one night, a new employee, had a not so great experience with him. He was closing that night. He's closing the bar down. And when he was almost done, he heard the distinct sound behind him, whips around, and sees a man appear at the bar. Teddy was doing his thing, just sitting there, staring, not moving, as he often did to other staff members. But this new employee panicked because he had obviously not been informed.
So rude. It's like your initiation.
Yep.
It's like, how soon does he get to see Teddy?
Yep. So then he runs to the doors to leave the bar, realizing he was locked in.
Oh, no.
So he's, like, freaked the fuck out.
Yeah.
Curls his hands into fists, and he's like, I'm gonna fight this guy.
What?
And I don't know if he just didn't. I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you just see the back of him.
Yeah. So he...
He's probably like those kids nowadays that think that Amelia Earhart and, like...
Right.
What's her name?
Somewhere in there, he realizes, I'm actually not going to fight this. I don't know if he was like, this is a fucking ghost. He instead starts, like, just hitting the door, the locked door that was locking him in. And he's just hitting it and hitting it. Nobody really knows, like, how long he kept that up. And it's not really known at what point Teddy's ghost kind of, like, went away. But this guy was practically clawing at the doors to get out of the bar.
Oh, my God.
Finally, another member of the staff heard what was going on, unlocks the door, lets him out, and he was like done. He was like, I'm never working here again. I'll work in any other part of the hotel. I'm not coming back to this bar.
Don't blame
he
him.
Never went back to the bar. Hmm. And he quit pretty quickly after. But that doesn't really seem like Teddy's fault.
Yeah, that seems like a personal problem, bud. If you just kept your cool, he would have been like, he just sat there.
Yeah. He's just chilling.
He's just chilling.
Second time.
Wow.
We're on one tonight.
It's like we're meant to be.
It's like we're married. Sally White was one of the Menger Hotel's most beloved staff members during the late 19th century. She was the sort of employee that really took, like, a lot of pleasure in her job and, like, helping people and, like, just took a lot of pride in what she did.
Mm-hmm.
Though at work, she was all smiles. She didn't have the best home life. Mm-hmm. Her husband, common-law husband, a guy named Harry Wheeler, was jealous. And stories went around the hotel that he was always jealous of any attention that was given to his wife. And she was so kind and nice that it's not like people ignored her.
Yeah.
His jealousy sparked endless arguments. Some of them even happened at her work.
Oh, my gosh.
March 28th of 1876, Harry's jealousy took a really unfortunate turn. I'm sure you can guess where I'm going. The evening prior, one of their arguments escalated really quickly. He ends up turning around on her, closes in on her, and he's so mad that he threatens to kill her. She panics and starts running from him to the local police station. She begged for the officers to help, and they agreed. They let her stay at the courthouse for the rest of the night. And an investigation of him in their house showed no signs of any kind of weapons, which they were like, we can't let you stay here forever. They had no charges to press on him because at that time there was no way to have any kind of evidence of anything, right?
Right.
Next morning, she gets back to the house. She grabs some of her items before she goes back to work. And Harry had been waiting for her with a fully loaded pistol. She ran and she busts out of their house. She runs down the street, hoping that she could like get away quick enough to where the gun wouldn't be a whole thing and she could get to the hotel. It was only a 2-block gap that she had to run, but he followed her down the whole 2 blocks, catches up, and grabs her by the throat and unloaded the entire magazine? Gun. Yeah.
What?
Yep.
That's so fucked up, dude.
He shot her once in the lower abdomen, and then she squirmed out of his grasp. He keeps shooting, and ends up hitting just to the left of her spine. Shoots a bunch, and she ended up not dying for 2 days. And she was actually kept at the hotel while she was, kept there, and that's where she ended up dying. He ends up never being arrested. Where he went after the shooting, nobody knows. They never found him.
Oh.
Mary Menger and the other management at the hotel loved her so much that they decided to fund all of her funeral costs. And they at the hotel, they still have the receipt for that.
That's so cute.
Yeah. Today, her ghost is still seen frequently throughout the hotel, but most of all on the third floor where she passed over 100 years ago, and it seems that she still likes to do her daily duties that she did at work as a ghost. She's commonly seen with an armful of towels or sheets. On two separate occasions, guests report seeing her walk through a door or wall as though there was, like, no barrier there. She would walk through walls and shit.
Mm-hmm.
Her hands were always full of sheets or towels. On another occasion, a guest had just gotten out of the shower, and she saw Sally's apparition folding sheets at the edge of her bed. She was terrified. She's like, somebody's in my fucking room.
Right.
And she ran down the stairs to the front desk, told the concierge everything that happened, and he was like, oh, yeah, that's, you just saw Sally.
So, good old Sally.
If you want to see her for yourself, your best bet is to book a room on the third floor of the, like, original section of the hotel. She is most often seen pretty much translucent, wearing a maid's uniform, generally has a scarf tied around her head, and she wears, like, a necklace of beads. And if you just choose to not make your bed, maybe she'll come in and make it. I don't know. Another ghost of note at the Manger is Captain Richard King. He was originally from New York City. He came from a poor Irish family that didn't have a lot of funds to provide for him. He didn't really see any other possibilities, so his parents sold him as an indentured servant.
Fuck?
And
could you imagine?
No. So he became an indentured servant to a jeweler in New York. Hated it. And the first opportunity he had, he escaped, stole away on a ferry that was going on the Mississippi River. And he ends up going on to be one of the most successful entrepreneurs of the 19th century, which is pretty badass. He founded a steamboat company and actually worked as a blockade runner during the Civil War. After he went to Texas for the first time, he loved it. He decided to buy a bunch of land in Corpus Christi. And there he opened King Ranch, which would end up growing to a monstrous 1 million acres.
What?
Yeah.
I can't even imagine 1 acre, let alone a million.
So he became a cattle baron. That's why he had a million acres.
Okay, Winnie the Pooh. Holy shit.
Winnie the Pooh? What?
The 100-acre wood.
Oh.
Or 1,000-acre. I don't remember what it is.
100 but... acres. This is the million-acre wood.
Yeah, it's like Winnie the Pooh on steroids, but...
That's awesome.
That's insane.
Yep. So he traveled a lot for business, would go to San Antonio a lot, and he would always stay at the Manger, and he went there so often that the hotel... gave him his own private suite on the second floor. Unfortunately, he got deathly sick with stomach cancer, and at the end of his life, he actually requested to be brought to his private suite where he died on April 14th of 1885.
It's like intentionally he wanted to die there?
Yeah, and his funeral was held there too, in the lobby.
In the lobby?
Yeah. So, he is also frequently seen there. His ghost is spotted at, generally in his old suite, obviously. Today, that suite is known as the King Ranch Suite, and you can book that room as well. Guests have reported all sorts of paranormal stuff in the suite, especially the sense of being watched. One woman was asleep, and she woke up, and she looked at the foot of the bed and sees him just standing there watching her.
Naturally.
Others have claimed to hear heavy footsteps just going around the room, in addition to hearing the shutters on the windows open and close by nothing. His apparition has been spotted roaming around the hallways on the second floor and then disappearing through doorways. But the strangest paranormal activity related to him is like a red orb that's seen, like, just floating around, dancing around the air, and it's only in his suite or just outside of it. Don't know what that is.
Interesting.
obviously, because of its proximity within San Antonio, the Manger has been the scene of many murders, many suicides. I didn't really get into those, but it seems like that obviously has an effect on how haunted it is.
Yeah.
In 1890, an Austin insurance agent showed up at the Manger. His name was H.H. Childers. He walks up to the bar, takes out his gun, and he just, like, finds this random driver that's sitting at the bar, too.
What the fuck?
Points at him, shoots him.
No. What?
Yep. Nobody knows why.
He's like, I really like Teddy Roosevelt. I'm going to kill you, though.
That's the thing is, I don't think that was even, I mean, I think we're just like literally giving context, like here, this is the same bar as Teddy Roosevelt. I don't think that had anything. He just like walks into this bar, sees a guy sitting there and shoots him and kills him. And he ends up, originally he was sentenced to 25 years and then he appealed it. Case was reversed and he was allowed a bond.
Okay.
Nobody knows why he did it. It's just completely random. Obviously adds to the vibes. Later in 1903, a mail and key clerk was visiting San Antonio originally. He had come from Kentucky, but at only 26 years old, he got super sick, and he was told that San Antonio might be a good place to, like, get better, which I get it for Estes, because, like, the air, but San Antonio, yeah. I don't get that. He did not get better. He ends up staying at the Manger.
He should have come to Estes Park.
Right. Well, so he ends up staying at the Manger, And he was so sick that he just didn't want to feel that way anymore. And he just cut his own throat.
Oh my God. I think every time I hear somebody cutting their own throats on this podcast, every single time I'm like, the willpower that it takes to like actually follow through with it, I would get like barely even a like cat scratch on my neck. And I'd be like, nope, nope, never mind.
Yeah. And it would seem that the Manger, like obviously it's a huge hotel, has been around for forever, has seen countless stories like that. Maybe not as gruesome, but like, and everybody says that when they do see the ghosts that were involved in murder, suicides, things like that, they're not just seeing them hanging around the hotel. They're seeing replays of their deaths.
So they're...
it's just dark as fuck. And yeah,
residual. What is that called? Yeah, there's a 100%,
but... that's the Manger.
That's insane. You can
go stay there if you want to.
And there's not any elevator shafts that you will fall down. So, yeah. Safer. Yeah. That's so interesting. I don't think that we talked about all of those on my ghost tour.
It's interesting that I got all that information from your ghost tour.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
If we did, I obviously forgot about a lot of it. We got a lot of information that night. We went to a lot of places.
I'm sure it's, like, hard to stand there and tell that entire history to a group that is literally standing up, like, waiting to go to the next place. Yeah. Like, you really got to pick and choose what...
I remember the story about the maid.
Yeah.
I don't remember the emptying the whole clip out. That's insane.
I think it was a revolver.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. All the bullets, then.
Six.
But yeah, that's insane how, like, hotels are so fucking haunted, and it's, like, all you're supposed to do is go there and sleep.
It's because people know that, and they're like, this is, like, a neutral ground for me to either commit this crime or kill myself.
Or kill someone else. Which is commit the crime. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah. You got anything else?
I don't, no.
Okay. Well, you can find us on Instagram, and that is where you can find our link tree. If you just search Who Knew Podcast, you can find our link tree, which takes you to our Patreon, or you can find us on Google. Not on Google. Well, I mean, probably on Google. Gmail, run by Google. If you want to email us, that's cool, too. WhoKnewPodcast666@gmail.com.
Yes. This is great. Find us on the Google.
Find us on the Google.
Yeah. We don't have any animals. They don't love us tonight, so.
Sleepy and grumpy, I guess.
And they ate trash, so.
They're little trash pandas tonight.
Thank you guys for listening. We shall see you next week. Bye.